Hi, this is Paul Carey from Kerryco. Check out our latest game release, Alley Cat, on iOS and Android. And check out our website at kerryco.net. Now I hand you back to Brad and the team at Tech Webcast.
If you like new stuff before anybody else, if you like to keep your finger on the pulse, if you like the future and want to be in it, keep on listening, cause we'll start in a minute. Tech Webcast. The hosts and guests are unsurpassed. Tech Webcast. Cause technology it moves so fast. Tech Webcast. Stick around and you're gonna have a blast. Yeah! Tech Webcast. Tech Webcast. Let's go!
Welcome to episode 385 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on the 9th of July 2016. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday at noon Melbourne time. Rate us on iTunes and like us at facebook.com/techwebcast. Follow us at Twitter at Tech Webcast and download the iPhone or Android Tech Webcast app. Your hosts today are Brad, Jacob, and myself, Daryl, and our very special guest is Dr. Kiki.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome, Dr. Kiki.
Thank you for having me on.
No problem. Good to have you on. Daryl, how's your week been, mate?
It's been a good week. Well, as I said before that we started recording, it was a good week until someone damaged our video recording conferencing camera at work, and so it's going to be an expensive exercise in getting that repaired. But other than that, good week. Yeah, good week.
Good stuff, mate. Let's go to Jacob. We don't need to ask how your week's been, mate, can we? Do we?
Let's put it this way. It was full of explosions.
And smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, not good, mate. You want to explain what happened?
Not really.
Just tell us a little bit of it. People might be interested to hear what happened.
Try getting hit by a lightning bolt.
Oh, good gracious.
Yes.
How are you feeling?
I'm all right. Put this way, I was sitting inside in my chair.
That's good. That's good.
No, it came in. It literally came through the cable, power cable on the wall and
what?
Shot everything.
Yeah, he blew TV, his Xbox TiVo, his Apple TV.
Wow.
His computer.
No, my computer's fine.
I hope it's fine.
At least that wasn't melted. At least you weren't melted.
Yeah.
That's good.
Hey, I've been hit by lightning 4 times. I'm still kicking.
Wow. Where are you located?
Newberry, Florida.
Newberry, Florida. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm in the...
You're in where?
I'm in the Plywood State.
The Plywood State.
That's right.
You need to put a lightning rod on the roof of your house, I think, Jacob, if you get any lightning strikes.
Yeah. Or just move the house somewhere where you don't get storms at all.
Have you been hit? Has it every time been in your house or has it been different locations?
No, this is the only one once that it hit in my room.
Interesting.
Wow. And how often does it happen, Jake? How often has it happened?
This is the only time.
Really?
Yeah, it's screwed up my 4th of July.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but would have, yeah. No, we would have been no fireworks.
Well, not...
Different kinds of fireworks.
Yeah, it would have been one big firework there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it was so bad, it reset the clock on my wall. Now everything's saying Celsius.
Well, you've joined Australia, Jacob. You've joined the rest of the world. Come on.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. It had a goal in mind.
It did.
But half of my room is okay.
And imperial measurements. That's what it was. That's what it was telling you.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Get rid of them.
Mm.
When everything wants to go kaboom.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're okay. What? That's scary.
It is very scary. Yeah. I couldn't believe that actually happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. And how's your week been?
Mine?
Yeah.
Oh, it's been fantastic. Well, I mean, 4th of July was wonderful. It was a nice camp out with friends around a pond. Lots of mosquitoes, mosquito bites, itching for the next few days. But then the rest of the week has been really just a calm week, which has been very pleasant. I was on a different podcast. I did my podcast, This Week in Science, on Wednesday night. And then yesterday, Thursday, I did drove out to meet some other people and do a comedy podcast, which was the first time I've done that. And that was really fun. And now I get to hang out with you guys.
Cool.
So, yeah. Pretty good. It's the week of podcasts.
Yeah. I love podcasting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking of podcasting, Darryl, how's your new podcast coming along? Is that going to happen soon?
It will. Now that my eye is improving after the surgery, I will be. Yeah, I will be in the next probably a couple of months. Two months. Yeah. Now that it was hard because of I had eye surgery, it was hard to know how that was going to recover, and I didn't want to sort of start something and then say, sorry, I've got to stop it again. And but no, the surgery went well. The eye is getting better each day, and so I'm really looking forward to starting it. Yep.
Good to hear, mate. What's the name of the podcast?
Converse, as in conversation. Okay. So right. It's going to be sort of. The idea is it's a one-on-one, styled interview sort of program where I just shoot the breeze with people.
Oh, that sounds good.
So, yeah. And no topic, within reason, I guess, no topics out of bounds. But it's just more about finding out about what drives people to do what they do and why they're passionate about certain things.
Awesome.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. Yes.
Go.
Yeah.
So there's no news stories today, Darryl. So do you want to mention any news before we go to the guest? Or
other than I say our video camera breaking down at work, which is not going to really interest anybody outside of my working environment. Probably the only news is Telstra was going to lay off more people. And outsource more of its stuff, I think, to the Philippines, which is great for the Philippines. I mean, I have no problem because, you know, life is very tough for many people in the Philippines, but it certainly doesn't help people, you know, those that are going to lose their jobs in Australia, and particularly after Telstra has had some big outages on its network. It's sort of, it's probably not related, but it certainly is a PR exercise to have several big outages over the last few months and then say, hey, by the way, we're going to lay off about 300 people. It's probably not the best PR angle. So, but that's really, as far as sort of Aussie tech news, because everything's been in abeyance because of the federal election here and the fact that we still don't have a winner decided. Well, it's close to being, but we might still have a hung parliament or the government will be returned with a very slim majority. And so things like the NBN, which was the National Broadband Network, which was an issue in the election about whether we would get fibre to the node or we get fibre to the home, that's all been sort of put on the back burner until the new government is established, which will maybe sometime next week. That'll happen. But yeah, so that's so I guess in the tech world and a lot of the world in Australia, everyone's been holding their breath while we had this endless election campaign and then waiting for the results to come through. It's the preferential system that we have here that means that voting takes days and days and days. Not that voting, but counting takes days and days and days when you've got a close result.
Yeah, exactly. And what about... what's this new game called? Pokemon?
Oh, Pokemon.
Pokemon Go.
Ah.
You want to mention that real quick?
Me? Yeah. Not me. Don't ask me to mention it.
Jacob, do you know what it is? What is it? Do you know what it is? Nikki, do you know what it is?
Yeah, so it's a game that involves you use your phone. It's a Pokemon phone, but it's augmented reality so that you use the camera to interact with your real world environment. It additionally skims map information. So wherever you are, it makes places that you need to go to collect important Pokemon balls or whatever they are, whatever you need to be able to go catch Pokemon characters that you'll be able to then fight against other players in the arenas. Basically, you have to go out into the real world and click on these little go to places and see what they are. Be aware of your environment, and maybe you'll find out something about the world around you that you haven't noticed before. Maybe either that, or you're going to get run over by a car. this is the second of the game of this type of game released by this the same company, which is, let me see it, which is released by Niantic. And Niantic also released a game called Ingress, which is a similar style game. But this one is Pokemon styled, and you get to play with your little Pokemon characters. And so I downloaded it so I can play it with my five-year-old and go run around outside and go collect important things and maybe see things and actually get outside and then play.
I think Niantic was bought by Google, or it had an association with Google, because that first game that you mentioned, Ingress, it was sort of released on Android for quite a while. It finally managed to get to iOS, but I tried it. But living in a small town, I sort of didn't have a lot of. It was sort of fairly blank where I am, but it was very popular, Ingress, for quite a while.
Yeah, so it was an internal startup at Google, according to Wikipedia, right. Yep. And then it spun out independently in 2015.
Must be,
and that was after the Google restructuring. Yep. Yeah.
But yeah, I living in a small community, there was not, my Ingress was pretty blank. So I did a lot of
walking. What's around me here?
Yeah, nothing.
Okay.
I did a lot of walking, but I didn't actually find anything very much. But I guess that helped the health. So it was mm-hmm. fine. But I didn't find much because, you know, as I say, I don't live in the capital city. So it was very, very, very sparse on the ground.
Right. I'm sure people are already getting in trouble for playing Pokemon Go, this new game. I mean, we tried turning it on yesterday. I tried, and then another person I know tried turning it on and playing the game, but the servers were completely overloaded within the first day. So there were a lot of people downloading and trying to play it, and they weren't able to keep up immediately. And then it's pretty funny. I saw Veronica Belmont post that in her neighborhood there were only maybe two people who gave her eye contact awareness as she was walking to dinner, because every single person she walked past was playing Pokemon Go.
Wow.
So, and there's a I was just doing a search on Facebook Signal for tech stories to see if there's anything rising up out of the flood of data. And there's a funny story posted by somebody posting a memo from their work saying, "We are paying you to work, not chase fictional video game characters with your cell phone all day. Save it for your break time or lunch. Otherwise, you'll have plenty of time unemployed to," quote, "Ooh, catch them all."
Uh-oh.
So day two, and people are already kind of, it's causing trouble.
It's sort of, I've got hooked on it already.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Productivity crashes.
It's pretty funny, yeah.
It is very funny. Jake, what do you think about the new Pokemon?
I have a few things to say about that.
Well, go ahead, mate.
Well, like Ingress, probably make you want to walk it on the map. It made Casey, one of our old friend Casey Grzelak, he actually drove into someone's parking stuff, and it's like, they're wanting to go in, wanting them to go inside the house.
Oh.
Someone else's house.
What?
Like, for instance.
Really? The map was actually telling you to go into someone else's house?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't know what's a house, what's a store, what's, you know, what's your house versus anybody else's house. I mean, this data is not put into the games. So I could imagine there would be a lot of that kind of, you know, little glitches where it's like, I can't really go there.
Yes, I could imagine knocking on someone's house. Excuse me, I'm just playing Ingress and I need to walk through your house. Do you mind?
Yeah, I mind. Get out.
It sort of reminds me of when Apple Maps first came out, and everyone laughed because Apple Maps was, you know, so appalling compared to Google's maps, because, you know, Google had the data for a lot longer. And out here in Australia, there were people getting lost in the outback because Apple Maps was directing them out to certain areas and there was just nothing there. So you're getting tourists driving out into the outback and finding, oh dear, you know, where am I? And so the police here are actually telling people at that time, don't use Apple Maps, please, because you get lost in the outback with no food or water, and that's the end of you.
Yeah, and no cell reception.
No cell reception. Exactly. You go out there and there's no cell phone reception. I can go a couple of hours here and there's no cell phone reception, but I mean, out there, it's appalling.
Oh my gosh. Mm. I don't know that Apple Maps is that much better now.
No, I haven't actually tried it really since, but it was, there was sort of these memes going around showing, you know, lines on maps that don't exist, and people, you know, and police having to go out and sort of rescue people that were getting lost out in these areas.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, so just go ahead, Jacob.
I was just saying, holy crap.
All right, so Daryl, do you want to introduce the guest before you do that? I just want to play this, mate, before we play this for the sponsor.
This week's Tech Webcast News is brought to you by Furious Marketing. Need a new website for your business? Visit furiousmarketing.com and mention the podcast to receive a discount. Now, back to you, Brad.
Well, that's very slick. That's a very slick voiceover, isn't it?
That voice is so fake.
I wouldn't like to say fake, but it's a radio voice. You know, it's
very computerish.
Very promo, very promo voice. It's sort of a more American voice for an Australian podcast, isn't it?
You know,
it
should be more.
Yeah, it should be, g'day, mate, you know. would you like our product, mate? Yeah, now back to you guys.
Yeah.
But no, our special guest today is Dr. Kiki. And Dr. Kiki is a PhD in molecular, cellular, and integrative physiology from UC Davis. And so I'll be asking you what the hell that all means. but you are involved, of course, with that sort of a qualification in science, and you had the This Week in Science Twiz podcast, and I remember seeing you on Leo Laporte's Twit Network, where it was hosted there for quite a number of years, and I used to sort of sit up occasionally late night and into the night here and try and stream it on my slow internet, and and really enjoyed the fact that it was different from the other podcasts that are on Leo's network, which were really solidly, if you like, technology. And this one sort of went into, this one branched off. And so I was really glad that when you left the Twit network that you continued the podcast and science. And so welcome to Tech Webcast, where although we are a technology webcast, podcast, I mean, science plays a big part in all that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's it was really wonderful to be able to start out. Well, I mean, we actually, the truth of the story is that we started out on our own on a college radio station and did that for a few years before we turned the show into a podcast. So I'd record it on cassette tape eventually on mini disc, and I would record the show and then convert it to an MP3, and then we started just throwing the files up once we got a website, throwing it up on the web. And then we're like, oh, what is this RSS feed thing? And so we created a podcast. And so This Week in Science has actually been around for a long time. But there was a certain point where we were like, okay, we're all moving to different places. And I'd started doing some work with Leo in Petaluma, California. And Leo opened up his studio to us and said, you can come here and live stream. And I love the live platform, you know, very, very much like keeping with live radio, doing a show, having people watching, being able to see the chat room and know that people are responding to things. That just, I love that. I mean, we used to have on radio, people would just call up and we didn't have a call screener. So we just get random people calling us and asking random questions in the middle of the show. Which was sometimes very interesting, but you know, having the chat room going there was really cool. And so it was, a neat thing to be a part of the TWiT network for as long as we were. And then, there was a point in time where it was good to move on. And so This Week in Science continued on its own, and, the tech network, TWiT network, went more focused on tech, as opposed to doing having other shows like ours on the network.
But it must have been a good way to take your podcast, if you like, to the next level, to sort of have some time on a big platform like TWiT.
Absolutely. I mean, we got we gained a lot of listeners and viewers, and it really moved us. We'd had on our website a forum for years, but that was, you know, the community hadn't really solidified and grown. But once we were on the TWiT network, that's when we really met the people who are still watching us today and who are really still listening to us. Although I do know that there are there's an Australian, Pamela, who has listened to the show since we first started podcasting, before we were on the TWiT network. So there are some people who have been around long term, but the bulk of our community has really come about because we were on the TWiT network, and it gave us more visibility and a better opportunity to actually interact with people. That chat room there is an amazing tool.
Yeah, it's so you can really engage with people in real time, rather than, you know, you put a podcast up and you hope that people will listen to it, and then maybe a few days later they might get back to you in a forum or through Facebook or wherever.
Yeah, exactly. So there's absolute real-time interaction, which I think is, I think it's brilliant, and it's just a really wonderful way to be able to meet people and see what people think what they think is funny about your show, what they don't like, what they do like, you know, various aspects, kind of watch it as it happens, as opposed to waiting for the emails to come back, you know, a day or two or a week or two or a month or two later that are like, oh, in episode XYZ, you know, this thing I didn't like very much, or I really liked this, and you go, oh wait, what? I have moved on from that.
And particularly with with technology, because it's so immediate. I mean, if you get a story and you've done a podcast, and then someone replies to it 6 months later, well, the story's gone. The technology may have even changed in that time frame, and so you sort of lose that immediacy. Where that's why I enjoyed TWiT, even though here in Australia it's the middle of the night in a lot of cases for us to watch it live. But occasionally, when I've had a bit of sleep deprivation, I've just sort of sat up on the iPad and streamed it live, and it certainly is a different when you watch it that way, rather than when it's been recorded and it's been uploaded to their website.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some things, you know, there's the difference when you're talking about news in the evergreen stories, which are things that, it's a documentary or it's a program on like a how to do something that, you know, can really be applicable for months to even years. And then there are the stories that are here and now, and, you know, some situation with a tech company might be developing in China and it could completely change in 24 to 48 hours. based on various factors, you know? So you've got all sorts of interesting things where it's some the news stuff. Although I will say that we have a really big back catalog of shows. And I think we recorded episode 574.
Wow.
This week. Oh. Yeah. We do one a week. Except for the occasional vacation. but we have a big back catalog, and people are constantly start listening, and then they kind of move into the back catalog if they like what they hear, and they just start listening to stuff. So even though there is this newsiness to the science that we're talking about, that's like, okay, this is what happened this week, it still fits over longer scales, and people are interested in learning about things, and so they'll go back and listen.
Excellent. So your background in science, I mean, was there a period in your life when you suddenly liked, like science suddenly switched a light on in your head, or was it a family that was in science, or was it a gradual process that you wanted to be involved in science?
It was a very gradual process, actually. I mean, I think I've always had more of a head for science than for other things that I could do. But I grew up out in the country. So going into biology and animal behavior and physiology, which I ended up doing, is, you know, it fits the path of where things would have come from, where my inspiration would have come from. I mean, I grew up swimming in ditches, making mud pies, you know, trying to figure out, you know, okay, there are sugar beets growing in the field next to my house. How can I make them into sugar? You know, various, you know, think childhood activities. And my dad, my mom and dad actually were English majors, but my dad did a little psychology and social science. And so he always was very, very, instrumental in getting me to think logically. And he always, whenever I brought something up, he would try and get me to think of it from the perspective of a debate and try and get me to think about things from a logical, rational perspective as opposed to an emotional one. I'm still working on this to this day, but I think that really was, you know, very, very instrumental in how I looked at the world and how I look at it today.
Your thought processes. Well, to get a PhD, you would have to sort of develop a mindset like that.
Yeah, you really want to ask questions and find something out. You know, a PhD isn't something that you go into kind of like, I think I'm going to get ice cream and, oh, yeah, I'll get a PhD too. You know, that's not the way it works. It's something that takes many, many years and a lot of dedication to a very small focus in the sciences. Like you have to just, there's a question and you're going to dig and you're going to dig and you're going to dig and you're going to come up against trouble and you're going to face that trouble head on and try and get around it, design experiments to get at your question, to be able to get you to understand the world or that little piece of the world that you're looking at with as little bias from yourself as involved. And so over the years, I definitely, you know, started out, I didn't quite know what I wanted to do when I started my collegiate studies. So as an undergraduate, I thought I was going to eventually join Greenpeace and save the whales. I just figured I'd be an environmentalist of sorts. I had thoughts of getting a law degree, but then I got into biology and I got really into ecology, and that led me to getting a degree in wildlife, fisheries, and conservation biology for my Bachelor of Science. And in the process of doing that, I did a summer program in the Rocky Mountains in Crested Butte, Colorado. And it's the Rocky Mountain Biological Laboratory. And it's a fabulous summer program for biologists and ecologists who are working on their degrees or going through things. And I had an amazing summer and I studied birds while I was there. And that led me back to my final year of school going, okay, I need to intern with somebody who works on birds because birds are the most awesome thing in the world. And so that really jump-started getting out and doing the summer program where I really got my feet wet doing field work and working with other scientists and other students who were kind of going through the same thing. It just really lit a fire for me, and it made me want to learn as much as I could about these amazing winged creatures. And so I ended up finding an internship with a new professor at UC Davis named Nicola Clayton, who's now at, I believe she's in Cambridge, England now. But while she was there, I worked in her lab doing studies of learning and memory in scrub jays. The Western scrub jay is the species of bird, and also looking at magpies and zebra finches. You might be familiar with zebra finches in Australia.
Yeah.
I guess as you pronounce it, zebra.
Zebra finches. Yeah, zebra finches. Yeah, old English here.
Doodaloo,
doodaloo. Hello, Governor.
Yeah, so I got to, and that was when going from ecology and just kind of how birds interact with the environment, then that's where the molecular, cellular, and integrative physiology comes into play. Because that's when I really started thinking from the perspective of, okay, the brains of these birds, what is happening in their brains to allow them to interact in the environment with the environment in a particular way? How come some species of birds are able to migrate thousands of miles and know exactly where they're going to go? Their summer grounds and their wintering grounds. They know exactly where they're going to go. How do they figure that out? How can other birds store food and remember where they've put their little caches of food for the winter season so that they can survive off of them when food still hasn't quite become plentiful in the early spring, yet they need to prepare for breeding? There are all these amazing adaptations that birds have that their brains make possible. And so it was amazing to me to start looking at things from what's considered an ethological perspective, where you start integrating brain and behavior and environment and trying to ask questions that integrate all three.
So that's how you got to be a doctor.
And that's how I got to be a doctor. And yeah. After a few years and looking at things and yeah.
Cool. And what about your name? How did the name come about?
So my given name is Kirsten. And when I was in college, when I was growing up, people pronounced it Kirsten. And then when I got to college, people just didn't pay attention or something, and they kept calling me Kristen, and I got really upset at that. And so I changed the pronunciation a little bit and started calling myself, introducing myself as Kirsten, because people would then hear Kirsten at least. And so the people who actually heard me say Kirsten, my close friends who knew me as that, then one of my closest friends started calling me Key. And then Kiki, and then my brother had children, and it was much easier to be called Kiki than Kirsten by a 2-year-old. and then I got my PhD, and so I got to be Dr. Kiki.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
That's where it came from.
That's awesome. Very awesome. Jacob, any questions?
Any related to Bill? Anything related to Bill Nye the Science Guy?
I'm not related to Bill Nye the Science Guy, no, but I think the thing that we have in common is that we're both very, very passionate about trying to help people understand the world that they live in. And that I haven't spoken with him personally. Maybe I need to interview him on my show so I can actually ask this question. But I think would both agree that if you get people interested in the world around them, if you get people, you know, starting to understand things, little things about the world, then that leads to a little bit more interest and asking more questions. And when people ask more questions, that's when things change. That's when excitement happens. That's when people start becoming their own drivers of discovery and start doing things. changing the world. And so I think it's a, I think that that's something that I feel very strongly about.
Okay, got a good one. What type of technology have you used in your studies and science?
Oh, wow. So it's been a little while, but most of the technology that I used a fun device called a cryostat, which was a very, very cold, like a freezer, pretty much, that had a slicing mechanism in it that could slice my 40 micron thick slices of brains that I needed to do my studies. So the cryostat was this precision instrument, machined and precisioned, and I had to keep it oiled and had to make sure that the blade, which was not like a blade like an X-Acto knife or a razor blade. It was more like a wedge, but the edge of the wedge was extremely thin. And it also was a little bit different temperature from the rest of the machine. And so it aided in the slicing of this frozen brain tissue that I had to work with. So that was one piece of technology, very well engineered and machined. Then I took those brain slices and I had to stain them. And then I used digital imaging technologies to be able to actually get really close in and be able to look at particular areas of the brain that I was interested in. So my area of interest is called the hippocampus. And in humans and birds, it's an area of the brain that is responsible for what's called consolidation of memory, which is taking all the information about a single event in time, the smells, the taste, the location, little sounds you heard, things that happened in that particular moment, and tying them all together. And the hippocampus is very important in that. And so the hippocampus, important in memory. So I was looking at it in birds and in humans and in other mammals. It's like deep down, kind of in between. If you could poke your fingers between your ears and then try and touch them in the middle, that's kind of where your hippocampus, near where your hippocampus is located. But bird brains, they're up on top of their brains. It's like up on the very, very tip top. And so they're a lot easier to access and easier to look at. And so I worked on studies which involved doing brain lesions. So there's a particular kind of acid that's actually injected into certain parts of the hippocampus to see how it affected consolidation of memories. So if you destroy the right side of the avian hippocampus, how does that affect it versus destroying the left side? If you get rid of the front versus the back, very, you know, very specific experiments that are the kinds of things that if you're an animal welfare proponent, you look at and go, ah, that sounds awful. And it was the kind of thing that over time actually led me to kind of getting out of the brain studies. I couldn't slice up any more brains after a while. But the technology was pretty awesome. So it was like this, I basically had a microscope with a camera in it that allowed me to trace the outline of the hippocampus in the brain, measure its volume, and then also count the cells, the neurons in the hippocampus that I was looking at. There were some studies that we did that were looking at new neurons that were being born. And in this ventricular zone of the hippocampus, there's a lot of activity of new cells being born constantly. And so we would look at that area of the brain and kind of mark and tag the cells and then count which ones were the new cells popping up. So there was a bunch of interesting technology that I got to play with. Yeah.
Very interesting. Do you have any favorite technology sort of gadgets like iPhones or whatever? Are you an Apple person?
I'm an Android person for my phone.
Okay.
Yep. I'm a big fan of I'm a little behind the times. I've got a Samsung Galaxy 4 at the moment. But I'm perfectly happy with it, except for I really, really want more memory in it. So I might have to upgrade just so I can have a phone with a little bit more memory. Oh. And then other than that, everything else I do is Apple. So my my desktop, my laptop. Those are Apple products. Let's see. Favorite technologies that I use on a regular basis. I don't know. Pen, paper. That's pretty awesome.
The old favorites.
That's really basic there.
It is very basic, yeah.
Very basic, but long. It's gonna last a long time after after other things disappear. You know,
I got one for you.
What?
A rock and a stone tablet.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, need to go back and learn some of the original cuneiform to be able to mark messages.
Yeah. What about social network? What's your favorite thing you like to use on the internet? Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat?
So I use, I've been on Twitter for years and I love Twitter. I absolutely adore Twitter and I've always had great interactions with people. And it's kind of been the place where I've met the most people from the podcasting world or from the science world or science journalism or just, you know, people who want to talk about things that I'm interested in. So to me, Twitter has always been my favorite. Facebook, I have a personal account that's like mine that I use for family and friends. And kind of for friends, it's like, okay, I have to have had a beer with you and enjoyed it, or I have to really, really want to have a beer with you.
Well, there's plenty of Australians that like a beer, so I mean, you'd probably have most of the continent as friends if it's the beer, if beer is the sort of the common denominator.
Yeah,
got the beer hippies.
Exactly, and then I have a Facebook page for myself, Dr. Kiki, and I also have a Facebook page for This Week in Science, my podcast. And then I also have an Instagram account, which I couldn't get Dr. Kiki because someone else had picked it up. But my Instagram account, let me see if I can remember. I'm the Dr. Kiki.
Oh, the one and only.
The Dr. Kiki on Instagram. And that's kind of like, I do some science stuff, but it's kind of a grab bag mishmash of just kind of things I enjoy. Lots of flowers and pretty things and things related to just all aspects of my life. So it's kind of like it's not specialized. But I definitely choose which pictures from Instagram I decide to share with Facebook or with Twitter, because not all pictures get to go to both or to either.
Hmm.
I have strange logic sometimes.
That's cool. what about Snapchat? Do you use Snapchat?
I don't use Snapchat. I tried I started using Snapchat. I did put it on my phone and it didn't grab me. And it's one of those things where I can maybe say like, maybe I'm too old. Maybe I'm too boring. I don't know. I didn't get pulled into it to kind of really, really start using it. For me now, if I'm going to use something, it really has to have either a personal benefit or a dramatic professional benefit, because there's so many things drawing your attention. Like there's the social network Elo that I signed up for my name, but I don't think I've ever visited it.
Wow.
That was the equivalent of Google Plus, sort of, I think, as an Elo. And I was the same.
Yeah.
I've got the app and I had an account and I talked, I think, to Brad and a few on it there a long, long time ago, and then just stopped using it.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've been back since.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't used it at all. And then I use Google Plus also because we do, This Week in Science, we use Google Hangouts on air. And so it's a really easy interface to go from my Google Plus account to the Hangouts, to schedule the Hangouts on air, to post about them, to actually do them. So Google Plus to me is actually, it's much, not so much my personal stuff, but more related to This Week in Science.
So I guess it's it's like with social media, as you said, because there's so many platforms out there, it's you nearly have to sort of sit down and work out what your priorities are and what you want to use as a personal platform, as you said, for family and friends, and then what may benefit you in your profession.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you going to spend your time? Where are you going to spend your time? I mean, for some people, it's LinkedIn. That LinkedIn has not worked for me either. That's not to say that it hasn't been amazing for other people.
And I think it's a matter, too, of making sure that if you are going to use a number of platforms, that you sort of have fresh content or different content in each. It's so easy these days to set yourself up where you post something on, say, Google Plus, and then it's fed to LinkedIn and it's fed somewhere else. And so people who follow you on multiple platforms, they're getting the same thing. And it's like, and in the end, they think, hold on, this is just being fed out to everything. Rather than I follow Dr. Kiki on Facebook because I get this technology or this information, or you follow you on somewhere else because you get something different.
Yeah. So for me, I do push out to LinkedIn. I use Hootsuite, and with Hootsuite, I push out to Twitter, Facebook, to my Dr. Kiki and This Week in Science accounts, to LinkedIn and also Google Plus. And you'll see that if you're following me on across the board, you'll see me responding to people on Twitter and on Facebook, but not other places.
Yep.
I just don't. I mean, I will occasionally check Google Plus like once a week. It's like once a week I go in and I check and I go, okay, I need to respond to this. But most of the time it's not anything that deserves a response. So I really think social media is, it's important to be on the big channels and to be using things. And so I think Periscope is now an interesting tool to use for getting out and being able to broadcast, say, if I want to prep people for the news stories that I'm going to be talking about on This Week in Science. Maybe while I'm cooking dinner, I'll turn on Periscope and I'll be like, hey, everybody. You know, and every once in a while, I'll just do a random Periscope where I'm dancing around the room or, you know, something silly. But I think it is also a useful tool for engaging people and talking to people in a different, on a different platform and in a different way. I tried Meerkat before Periscope because Meerkat was available for Android before Periscope was. And I really wanted Meerkat to work. I was like, yay, community. But then I started looking at the data and Periscope was growing much more quickly. And then when Twitter bought Periscope, it just became the no-brainer that Periscope was where it was going to switch.
Do you look at Facebook Live as well now? Now that Facebook, you can stream live on Facebook?
So this is a really cool thing. We are streaming live on Facebook now when we do our show. And I haven't been doing it personally, but I might start. It just, you know, it's one of those things of how much time to put into something.
Exactly.
And what's the payoff? And so you really have to, you know, figure out the cost-benefit analysis for yourself on these things. How much of an audience are you potentially going to get for doing a live Facebook stream versus a live Periscope stream? And how is that going to help promote the thing that you do that brings in revenue, if that's what you're, you know, if that's the way you're thinking about it? Or how is that going to promote the thing that you really want to tell people about? You know, which is going to give you the better payoff? So the coolest thing is that a member of our audience contacted me and asked me if we wanted help in simulcasting the Twist live stream to Facebook. And so I talked to him a bit about it and was like, yes, let's do this. And so this guy, Brandon, is helping to live stream Twist to Facebook. So every Wednesday when we start, I have sent him information for the Facebook feed, and he picks up the YouTube live stream, which is what it really is YouTube Live. He picks up that stream and shunts it over to Facebook using his machines that he's got a system set up to do this already. And so he was like, I'm doing this already and I really want to help you out. So can I help?
Keep that guy around.
Oh, it's so awesome. Yeah, it's great.
What do you think, Darryl, about us doing Facebook Live maybe? That's a good idea, isn't it?
Well, I think it adds. I'd certainly like to get into it, to do a bit more streaming, but as I've been saying with, you know, once our internet improves here with the NBN, then live streaming becomes more of an option at the moment. Personally, for me, it's unless I use cellular, which is hideously expensive, my internet's really, you know, is not fast enough to give the quality that I'd like. But yeah, I think streaming, you know, being able to get out there to people on their phones and tablets wherever they are, rather than them having to be sitting at a desktop computer or a notebook computer to be able to watch, would be great.
Yeah. And what do you think, Jacob?
Pretty cool.
Well, it is, isn't it? Pretty cool, yeah.
Awesome.
Well, Jacob's got such fast internet over there. He could probably record half the internet and stream it out live. So we could all feed it through Jacob's computers, and you know he could stream it all out everywhere because
as long as he doesn't get hit
by lightning again.
Lightning, yeah.
No, live stream it if you do. You'll get a lot of your ratings will go up.
But I'm sure the insurance will cover that, though.
Oh, I hope so.
I hope so. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
I've got one more question of Dr. Kiki. So I sort of wanted to link technology and science in some way because we're sort of a tech podcast and you're a science, you do science podcasts. I mean, artificial intelligence and virtual reality are sort of the big buzzwords around in the technology sphere at the moment. As someone who's deeply involved with biology and sort of knows, you know, at the molecular level and everything, what are your thoughts about how technology is moving towards artificial intelligence? And do you have any fears for the future, you know, the rise of the machines or that sort of stuff?
I think we're moving forward very quickly. And, people are working on artificial intelligence, you know, not just the basic artificial intelligence, but the super intelligence that would be human level and even beyond, not just very specialized, like something that works in your iPhone, you know, to help you, you know, Google to search Google for answers to questions. You know, that's a very basic AI versus something that actually understands your needs and your wants and responds to you or even helps to plan your life or even helps to plan society. So we are in a very interesting time right now. And I think that the experts who have been weighing in on this are, they're right on the money in that it's going to happen. We are going to get super intelligent AIs. And the question is, when? Is it going to be 2045? Is it going to be 2025? I mean, that's all a matter of the technology underlying the software. You know, how much information can you pipe through a circuit in any given amount of time? And how many circuits can you put in parallel in a really, really tiny space? And the architecture of how the software uses the hardware is going to be, you know, that's going to be amazing. We've already seen AlphaGo beat one of the world Go champions this last couple months ago. However, there are some things that the AIs haven't completely gotten good at. So facial recognition is one area that they've been working on as well, because it would be great to have cameras everywhere, be able to identify people or even similar faces for various uses. And a Chinese company has an AI that they've been developing for facial recognition. They put it up against a human facial recognition memory champion like a week ago, and they were neck and neck, recognizing faces basically at the same pace up until the very end, when the last category of the competition was to take faces that they had seen and match them to child's faces. So to take what the adult looked like and try and figure out what child they were connected to, what picture of a child they were connected to. And that's where the human beat the AI. So there's still a distance to go there. Overall, I think that we need to be watchful and that there needs to be transparency and that the AIs, as they become more and more intelligent, need to be programmed with human needs in mind and not given opportunities to take their programs and run with them, which, you know, which could happen. And that's where the problem lies, in that these intelligences are not going to be human by any means. They're not going, you know, the interface will make them seem human, but the intelligence behind the interface will not be human and will not have the same needs, wants, or goals in the end. And the goals and the needs, the wants, those are all determined by programming. And so these are very philosophical questions that the programmers need to be thinking of. And I hope that they are.
Yes, I don't want, I was thinking of, you know, Sky, I mean, it's science fiction, but you sort of think down the track of Skynet. And it, but you, but then you think, well, if artificial intelligence does become eventually the sentient, then, as you said, you know, it's not, it, if it's not programmed in a human way, then it is basically an alien intelligence that could be completely different to our wants and needs.
Absolutely. Exactly. I mean, there's the, in programming, there are command lines, you know, there's the basic directives of a program. And so an artificial intelligence is going to be, it's a program, you know, it's software. It is, you know, complex, and it will be learning things based on the information that it receives in whatever situation. But how it uses that information is going to be based on the programming. And there's some great thought experiments out there of, you know, so what if you're programming, and there's a company, there's a, I can't remember the name of the website that came up that wrote this thought experiment out. And I wish I could, because it's brilliant. But the idea is, there's a company that makes some kind of widget. And their directive is to make, you know, as many widgets as they can. And so they're developing some AI to help make these widgets and to make the widgets more efficiently, to get them done faster, to use resources wisely. And it's just going to be an internal company situation. And so the AI, as all AIs should be until they're not given access to the internet. And so the AI at some point starts asking for more information. And finally, it's like, you know, asking the programmers, because they've got a question answer interface between the programmers and the AI. And at a certain point, the AI says, can I just have access to more information for just a little bit? I need to figure this thing out. And so the programmers decide, hey, why not? Whatever. And they give the AI access to the internet for like 15 minutes, and then they're done. And the AI continues along its path and doesn't seem like anything happened. But within 2 days, it has taken over the entire world, started using all of the resources to create widgets, decided that humans are dispensable, and started killing humans because they are getting in the way of creating these widgets. And so it was just a simple AI made to make widgets.
Yes, it's. I think someone needs to do a program like this week in artificial philosophy or something like that, because some of these questions are huge, you know. And because technology, by its definition, just it rushes. You know, so, nothing wrong with it. It rushes to solve problems, but it's everything else that's got to catch up with it.
Yeah, and part of the problem is, we're not quite ready for the AI that's going to come. And philosophers and artificial intelligence creators, you know, have determined that there's going to be a point when artificial intelligence reaches human level intelligence. And that'll be cool, because we'll be working with AI that is at a very similar level of intelligence as us. But very shortly after that, you know, if we're talking about exponential exponential growth in the technology very, very shortly after. It's a long time to get to that point of human level intelligence, but very shortly after that, it will surpass us. And then it will surpass us exponentially more, and it will be superhuman intelligence. It will be beyond us, and it will be as if we were trying to converse with an ant. That AI will be so far beyond us in intelligence that we will be like ants to it. And that is what we're not ready for.
Yep.
Wow. That is great information. That is awesome.
Yay, future.
Reasons.
Yes, yes. That is awesome. That is awesome. Jacob, what do you think about all this, mate, before we wrap up?
Not bad, not bad.
You mean not bad? Not. It's more than not bad. It's awesome, mate.
Yeah. It's a...
Okay.
And then the VR world is going to be amazing too. I have friends who are working in virtual reality. One of my friends is one of the founders of Second Life and has been working on Second Life for years, but has moved on and has a new endeavor in which it's all going to be based in 3D avatars in which you've got haptic feedback and you can wear gloves and goggles and basically immerse yourself in a 3D environment. And it's very much going to be a fascinating development when that becomes an everyday thing for the majority of people.
Well, then you can use the virtual reality to hide from the artificial intelligence.
Yes, there we go.
We can all go into virtual reality and let the artificial intelligence, you know, run the rest of the world. We'll just hide in virtual reality.
Yeah, what's the name? High Fidelity is the company he's working on, which is, yeah, Philip Rosedale and High Fidelity.
Do you know of Robert?
Pretty amazing.
Do you know Robert Scoble?
Yes.
Yeah, he's been on this podcast a few times. He's also into that sort of thing as well. He loves it.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's cool stuff.
Yeah, it is very cool. Daryl, what's your final view of the show, mate?
You could go on talking about this sort of stuff for hours. I know we haven't, but you could. It's just so the thinking and deep thinking and that. But it's great. It was great to have that sort of crossover between technology and I suppose it's wrong to say technology and science because it's all one and the same. But biological, if you like, what nature does and what we as humans are trying to do. So it's great.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's it. Daryl, where can they hold you on Twitter, mate?
They can get me at Learnscape on the Twitters. And I'm also on Google Plus. So Dr. Keekin is not the only one left on Google Plus. I'm still floating around there at Daryl Hunt on Google Plus.
Okay, cool, mate. Good stuff. Want to tell us how the joke again?
Oh, about me turning the lights off on Google Plus, you know, being the last one there. But I'm glad Dr. Kiki is there. And I know Mike Elgin is there and I have a humble presence on there. So it's good. It's still a good platform, but a lot of people had given up on it, but I still use it from time to time.
Well, a good show. Do you know a guy by the name of Dan McDermott at all, Daryl?
Yes, he has a McDermott.
Well, he shows that actually has stopped working, not doing the show anymore.
Oh, I've sort of followed him on Google Plus, and he had the McDermott show. He streamed it on YouTube, you know. And then because of the time zone constraints, I sort of, you know, I watched one or two, but they were very long.
Yeah, they were. He used to do it when we, he used to go live when we were doing tech webcasts this time of the day.
Yeah, yeah, and I did at night watch it after it had been, like, some of them after they were being...
What did you think of the show? What did you think of the people that are on the show? What did you think of it?
Oh, look, it's like anything. You know, some shows, I mean, I didn't watch a lot of them, but sometimes, you know, I was interested in some of the guests and not as interested in some of the others. I just found sometimes it was very long. But again, it's a time zone issue for me because at times I'd look at it would sort of like, oh, I need to get some sleep here. So, it's a pity that he's shut it down. Maybe it just wasn't doing what he wanted, or maybe he just thinks it's run its course and he might come back with something different. That happens at times.
Okay. Jake, what about you?
Oh, you can find me at jazzbot326691z.
Good stuff, man. You can get me on Twitter at Brad Oz on the Tech Webcast. Jake, what is your view of the Damon Dammit show?
Crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy, wasn't it?
I must have missed those episodes.
Well, mate, there was one episode that he did. Well, Jake, you want to explain what happened?
I never watched the episodes.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not going to explain, but just
Jack, you go ahead and explain it to
well, just a few people on there just go a little bit stupid on there, then they sort of go off their head. But yeah,
run around with their heads cut off like chickens.
But anyway, so Dr. Kiki, where can they get hold of you?
So I'm on Twitter as at Dr. Kiki, at Dr. Kiki, D-R-K-I-K-I. And I'm on Facebook as Dr. Kiki. And my show, This Week in Science, can be found at twis.org. We're also at Twist Science on Twitter.
Good stuff. Appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Dr. Kiki. That
nice
was
to meet
fantastic.
You both. Yeah, meet you all.
You too. And come back on any time if you're free.
Thank you.
And we always have a good guest on every week. Next week, Darryl, we've got a guy coming on to talk about vinyl stuff.
Oh, you mean records?
Yes, and he has a YouTube channel. He actually came to me and wanted to come on. So
you youngins that have found out what we did years ago. You know.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting conversation.
Yes, it is. The rise and fall and rise of vinyl. I mean, I'd given up on vinyl quite a long time ago because vinyl was what I grew up with, and now apparently it's back.
It is very back, man. It's taken off big time.
It's to be cool.
Who would have thunk it?
Even in Melbourne, it's kind of, you know, big in Melbourne here, and I'm sure it's big around wherever it is. You know,
The indie musos are getting back into it too, which is good. Yeah. Which is good.
Very cool. So yeah, so he's going to be on next week, and so that'd be interesting conversation.
Excellent.
Next week. So thanks, Jacob. Thanks, Dr. Kiki and Darryl Hunt. Thank you, mate.
Thank you all. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tech Webcast. The hosts and guests are unsurpassed. Tech Webcast. Because technology, it moves so fast. Tech Webcast. Ha! Stick around and you're gonna have a blast. Yeah! Tech Webcast. Ha! Ha! Tech Webcast. Big ups to Andrew, to Brad, Jody, Steve, and Jennifer! Boom!